All right, so we're diving deep into Louisiana family law today. And we've got two cases, really fascinating cases, that I think are going to highlight how the courts kind of struggle with, enforcing obligations, defining what it even means to be a parent, parental rights. And it's interesting that these cases, on the surface, they seem very different. One's about not paying support, the other one's about, who is the legal dad. Right. But both of them turn on these really specific procedural rules, and that's something that Louisiana is really known for, right?
And it's something that any aspiring lawyer, especially those interested in family law in Louisiana, really need to get a handle on.
So you brought some really interesting stuff to the table, and we're going to unpack it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So first up, we've got Ledger v. Ledger, a divorce case from 1998. So this is going way back.
Back in the day.
And, it started out as just your regular divorce, but it turned into a whole contempt of court situation because of unpaid alimony and child support.
Right.
And I think this is a really good lesson for anybody, especially law students, about just how seriously the courts take their orders.
Oh, yeah.
They mean business.
This is not a suggestion. This
Yeah.
is, you have to do this.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so then we're going to switch gears and talk about the Fontenot paternity case.
Okay.
And this one is about those crucial deadlines for a dad, a biological dad, to actually be considered the legal father.
Right, to have those rights and responsibilities.
And when we look at these two cases side by side, I think it really highlights how Louisiana law tries to balance enforcing those court orders with, protecting parents' rights and ultimately, making sure everything's fair.
Yeah, and it all comes back to those very specific procedural rules, those
Yeah.
deadlines that we talked about.
Exactly. So let's start with Ledger v. Ledger, and just kind of lay out the facts. So on the surface, pretty simple. The Ledgers got divorced in 98, and then Mr. Ledger stopped paying alimony and child support. His excuse: a car accident. He claimed that because of this accident, he just couldn't pay. But, and this is a huge but, he never actually told his ex-wife any of this.
Oof, bad move.
Right, just completely cut off communication.
Yeah, that's never a good look in the eyes of the court.
You would think that would be like step one, right?
Absolutely.
Pick up the phone.
Communicate, work it out.
So later on, Mr. Ledger admitted that, yeah, okay, he owed $5,500 in back payments, so obviously his ex-wife went to court. Wanted him to face some consequences for this, ask the court to find him in contempt. What's really fascinating here, and I think this is where it gets interesting for law students, is that it wasn't just about the fact that the money wasn't paid. It was about what happens when you just ignore a direct order from a court.
Right. It's about the principle of the thing, too. The court issued an order, and it expects that order to be followed.
Absolutely. So the big question, legally speaking, is, was it even right for the court to consider throwing Mr. Lelouger in jail for not paying? I mean, that's a pretty extreme step, isn't it? What if he really couldn't afford it because of the accident?
Yeah, so that's where things get a little more complex. Louisiana law, like many states, gives courts this power to enforce their orders through contempt proceedings. It's basically the court's way of saying, look, we issued this order and there have to be consequences if you don't follow it.
Old sense.
But here's the catch, the crucial part to be found in contempt. You usually have to be willfully disobeying.
Willfully.
The court really had to figure out, was this guy just refusing to pay, or was he really genuinely unable to pay because of this car accident? That difference, that's what makes or breaks these contempt cases.
So the court did find him in contempt. So how did they reach that conclusion? What was their reasoning?
So the trial court really honed in on two key things. Number one, and you touched on this earlier, Mr. Leisure never even tried to talk to his ex-wife, never tried to renegotiate those payments. He just stopped paying.
Radio silence.
Exactly. That really didn't look good. The
No.
court was like, okay, you knew you had these obligations, but you just decided to ignore them.
Red flag.
Huge red flag.
Yeah.
And then, point number two, they looked back at an earlier agreement in the case, this thing called a stipulation,
Okay.
where Mr. Leisure basically admitted he had the capacity to pay this money earlier on. So the court's thinking, well, if you could pay before, why not now? Maybe this financial hardship isn't as bad as you're saying it is.
So it wasn't just about the money itself, it was how he acted after this accident, after his situation supposedly changed.
Precisely. It's like the court was saying, okay, even if you're going through a tough time, you can't just stop following a court order. You at least have to try to communicate, find a different solution, work something out.
Right. It's about respect for the process.
Exactly. And this case, Lidger, It really shows that when courts are looking at contempt in these financial situations, it's not just about whether the money's there. It's about the entire process. Did you communicate? Did you try to follow the court's instructions, even if things were difficult?
So what about that potential jail time? That sounds extreme.
So chances are that wasn't about punishing Mr. Lidger for being in a tough spot. It was more about coercing him, compelling him to follow through on what he was ordered to do.
Interesting.
It's this concept called civil contempt, and it's actually constitutionally permissible. You know, courts can do that.
Yeah.
There's this big Supreme Court case, Turner v. Rogers, that established that.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, so let's switch gears completely, move on to our second case, the Fontenot paternity case.
Let's do it.
This one, it's not about enforcing existing orders. It's about, you know, who is legally considered a parent and how crucial legal deadlines are in that whole determination.
Right. And how sometimes those deadlines, they can lead to some tough situations.
So the story goes like this. Dr. Fontenot, he had an affair back in 2011 with a married woman, Danielle.
Okay.
Their daughter, Gracelyn, she was born the following year, 2012.
Right.
Later that same year, DNA testing confirmed. Yep. Dr. Fontenot is the biological father. But here's the catch, and it's a big one. He didn't actually file anything legally to establish his paternity to get custody until 2014. So for those 2 years, legally speaking, Danielle's husband, Michael, he was the presumed father.
Right, under the law. So you got this clash between, you know, biology and what the law says.
Exactly. So what was the main legal framework that the court had to work with here? What were they looking at?
So the heart of the matter is this Louisiana Civil Code Article 198.
Okay.
And this article lays down some very strict time limits, these things called preemptive periods, for filing a paternity action, especially in situations where there's already a presumed father.
Okay.
The general rule, 1 year, you've got 1 year from the child's birth to file that lawsuit. Now, there's an exception, and it's all about whether the mom deceived the father about being the dad.
Okay.
If that happened, then the deadline is extended.
Yeah.
It becomes 1 year from when the father knew or should have known he was the dad, or 10 years from the child's birth, whichever comes first.
So preemptive. That's a word I think we need to break down here.
Yeah, it's a very specific legal term.
It's different from prescription, which we hear a lot in law. For people who aren't lawyers, what's the difference?
So think of it like this. Prescription, it's like a time limit on your ticket to court. The right might still technically exist, but you can't go to court to enforce it anymore. Preemption, on the other hand, it's like the right itself disappears.
Oh, wow.
Poof.
Yeah.
Gone. After that preemptive period, it's like you never even had that right to begin with.
So it's way more serious.
Way more serious. It's a much harder deadline.
So how did the court apply all of this to Dr. Fontenot?
So they really focused on that presumed father, Michael. Because he was considered the legal father from the moment Gracelyn was born, that one-year clock, that preemptive period, it started ticking right then for Dr.
Yeah.
Fontenot. He didn't file until 2014, way past that one-year mark. Now, there's that exception we talked about, the mom's bad faith deception.
Right.
Well, he did get those DNA results in 2012.
Okay.
But the court said, hold on, there's no proof that Danielle lied to him about him being the father.
That's an interesting distinction.
Yeah, it's very specific. Hmm. She might not have told him everything, like about the legal stuff, mm-hmm. about the presumption of paternity because of her marriage, but she didn't directly lie about him being the biological father.
Right.
And since he knew, because of that DNA test, even if you could argue that the exception kicked in at that point, 2014 was still too late.
So he missed the boat legally.
He missed the boat. The preemptive period, it had run out no matter how you look at it.
This case is really tough because it highlights that conflict between, you know, being the biological parent versus what the law says about who the parent is.
Yeah.
And it seems like the court was really prioritizing the stability of that existing family unit, even though, biologically, Dr. Fontenot was identified relatively early on.
It definitely seems that way. The court really wanted to protect the existing marriage, avoid any challenges to the presumed father, you know, years down the line. And, you know, you can understand that. Imagine the disruption, the emotional toll, if paternity could be questioned endlessly.
Right.
But it does raise questions about fairness, especially for these biological fathers who take action relatively quickly, but still get blocked by these deadlines. What about situations where they don't even know about the child within that first year?
Really makes you think. So let's compare these two cases now, Leger and Fontenot. What are the main differences?
Well, both cases really show how much the Louisiana courts value those procedural rules.
Mm.
You know, in Leisure, it was all about following those financial orders from the court and, just as importantly, communicating if there were problems.
Right.
In Fontenot, it's all about hitting that deadline to file for paternity. You snooze, you lose. But the consequences for messing up, totally different. Leisure, yeah, jail time was a possibility, but it was more about forcing him to do the right thing. In Fontenot, Dr. Fontenot completely lost the right to even be recognized as the dad.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Forever. That's it.
And the legal principles at play, they're different too.
Definitely.
Leisure, it was all about whether he was willfully disobeying. Did he do it on purpose? But Fontenot, that was a strict liability situation. Missed the deadline. Doesn't matter why, you're out of luck.
Exactly. It really shows how different areas of family law have different goals. Leisure, it's about making sure court orders are followed, that families are supported financially. Fontenot, it's about creating that sense of finality, of stability mm-hmm. in family relationships, even if sometimes that means that the biological connection loses out.
So for all those future lawyers listening, what are the big lessons they should take away from these cases?
From Leisure, the big one. Document everything. Every single effort you make to follow court orders, write it down, keep a record.
Especially if you hit a rough patch financially, right?
Especially then. Don't just stop paying. Talk to the other party. Try to work something out. Even better, go through the proper channels. File for a modification of the court order. You need that paper trail, that communication, to show that you were trying. That's going to be your best defense against any contempt charges.
Good advice. And Fontenot, what's the big takeaway there?
Those peremptive periods in Louisiana law, they are not messing around.
No wiggle room.
No wiggle room. If there's a time limit, especially in family law, especially with paternity, you got to know those dates like the back of your hand. Put them on your calendar, set reminders, act fast. Because once that deadline passes, it's over.
And what about that bad faith exception we talked about?
Yeah. So if a mother is accused of deception, the courts in Louisiana are really strict about how they interpret that. Don't assume it applies to you. The deception has to be directly about who the father is. Not just about the consequences of acknowledging paternity. It's very specific.
So big picture, what do these cases tell us about how Louisiana family law works?
They tell us that biology isn't everything. Fontenot really drives that point home. Hmm. Timing, it can be the deciding factor when it comes to parental rights. Louisiana prioritizes order, stability in families. And those procedural rules, they might seem harsh sometimes, but they serve that purpose.
It's really fascinating stuff. When you look at these cases side by side, it makes you think about the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of these strict rules on families, on people's lives. How do we balance the need for order, for finality, with fairness? And what about the child's best interests?
Yeah.
Lots to ponder. Thanks for breaking all of this down for us.
Absolutely. It's been a great discussion.
All right. That's it for our deep dive today.
Until next time.
See you then.